Welcome to Haven't Seen It, a movie podcast hosted by Tim Sestito and Tommy Tevenet. One of these hosts hasn't seen the movie, and they're going to talk about it. Expect great insight.
Tim's really testing my commitment to the podcast by making me watch The Godfather.
Witty banter.
I like RoboCop shooting dicks, I guess.
And lots of laughs. Haven't Seen It. Available on Apple, Spotify, and all other major podcast platforms.
Just keep saying to yourself, it's only a movie. It's only a movie. It's only a movie that will have you living in the sixth dimension.
Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast That Wouldn't Die. I'm your host, Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hello.
This week on the podcast, we're going to discuss Aaron's wild card selection, Forbidden Zone, starring ever so briefly Danny Elfman of Oingo Boingo. So good times.
Each week, a special guest appearance.
Pretty much. Each week on the podcast, we discuss guilty pleasures and forgotten classics of the horror and sci-fi genres with a comedic twist. Aaron, how you doing?
You know, I have been obsessed with sister wives, especially since the breakup of the relationships. So I had to turn back to an old classic called Big Love. Swear to Jesus above that they stole every idea for their crazy reality series from Big Love. Mentioned running for office. Bill on Big Love runs for office. They try to add a fourth wife. It blows everything up in the reality series. Adding the fourth wife and him ended up monogamy. Every bad thing that happens is all based on the husband's erratic choices. When they don't work out, blames everyone else around him, just like on Big Love. And Big Love came out first. So there were some wackadoo polygamists living in St. George, Utah, who were clearly getting a woof of Big Love and sold their souls to TLC. And here we are. But as I'm nearing the end of the rewatch of Big Love, I'm like, what the f*** is going to happen next? That is just a ripoff. Fascinating. Fascinating.
I mean, the idea of polygamy sounds like a barrel of laughs, but I'm sure the reality, not nearly so.
I will tell you, just like in the fake reality show, it all looks great. You've been married for a long time. You got little kids. You got somebody else to help you who's cooking dinner or watching the kids. It all sounds great. And then you just see it. It's all about suppress, suppress, suppress. You any jealousy, that's on you. Anything that goes wrong, that's on you. It's your personal responsibility until you either just kill your own soul or you run off screaming.
Anywho, why don't you give us your 30-second synopsis on The Forbidden Zone?
Oh, man. All I can tell you, it gives vibes of like those weird 1930s cartoons. Like when I was a kid, you go to these kiddie matinees during the summer where parents would just drop off their feral children with like a quarter and you get like a little popcorn and a sodas and it'd be like a half a day extravaganza thrown on by the JCs. So they would show newsreels followed by like shorts, like the Lone Ranger or Buck Rogers, followed by the old cartoons from the 30s and 40s, and then like a third run movie. It would be like
How old are you, Aaron? That's just Buck Rogers, cereals? What are you talking about?
These were shows that like mom would watch, but literally they'd be cheap to rent. So this is at the Camelot Theater in Palm Springs. They call it kiddie matinees. It'd be like once a week. So this has that vibe of these old, like, 1930s cartoons, like Steamboat Willie, but really, like, racist? Racist imagery? Anyway, heroin addict, stashing his heroin, discover it in his flop house, discovers a portal to the Forbidden Zone, which doesn't seem any weirder than the reality, if you ask me. And in the Forbidden Zone, just bizarro crap happens. They clearly psychically predicted all the gunplay going on at the high schools, though. I have to tell you that, in 1977. And then shit goes on. The queen dies. Hervé Villechaize is in it. It's just a whirl, and then it's over. I mean, what the fuck? I have to say, I recommended this because, you know, back in the groovy 90s, I used to live in the Bay Area, and then we would go to San Francisco. We'd frequent this place called the Kennel Club, and that's where I saw the Bay City Rollers finally. But it would be projected on the back wall in glorious black and white. We watch a colorized version, if you can believe in this day and age, they colorize. Right. This is a black and white film. So it would just be playing in the background silently. And I was always like, what the hell? The Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, what the hell's going on? So it's always been on the back of my mind to watch this. And
I had never even heard of this thing. The only reason I knew that, okay, Oingo Boingo, the 80s band, was originally in the 70s, kind of a bizarro theater troupe, which I didn't even know, called the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo.
Uh-huh.
And that was, like, literally, it's kismet. You mentioned this movie to me, like, a week or two ago, I saw on my feed the time the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo were on The Gong Show. Just a bizarre.
That was fantastic.
Just a bizarre confluence of events. So you're like suggesting this. I'm like, whatever. I know absolutely nothing about this. And literally, I had my pad and paper ready to take notes. And 5 minutes into the movie, I just put my paper down. And I'm like, I'm out. I'm just gonna lay here and let the imagery wash over me and. I don't know. You're going to have to do the heavy lifting on this episode, Aaron. I'm going
to
be honest with you.
Well, I have to agree with you because I wrote Tubi, Forbidden Zone, Old Time Mickey Mouse, Richard Elfman, Maria Pascal Elfman, and I wrote nothing else.
God.
And I wrote nothing else. So I, as I was supposedly watching it, I was like deep diving the theater of the absurd and how they tried to do a Kickstarter to do a part two of this in 2014 and they raised the funds, but nothing's happened since then.
Oh God. What an American horror story. It is
offensive.
It is. It's nonstop nudity, weird nudity and weird like pseudo sex going on constantly.
Yes. And a couple of like Nazi era anti-Semitic gentlemen, which it makes it even weirder because the Elfmans are in fact Jewish.
Yes.
So what's happening? I felt like after watching that I had slipped into the Forbidden Zone, and people find it quite amusing. Apparently,
amusing. This is right up your alley, Aaron.
Oh my God. It is not. I was like, I enjoyed the sets. I thought some of the cartoon stuff looked really cool. But for the most part, I was like, when's this shit going to be over?
I would have been out five minutes in.
I was like, Kevin's going to come back and say, we're sure as fuck not recording this. I thought for sure that's what you were going to tell me.
I asked you because you saw it before I did. I'm like, is it worth doing this?
I'm not sure you asked that question. I said, Kevin, You're going to hate this.
You did say that. And I said, can we goof on it? And you said, yes.
Should be able to goop on it. That's true. But I got to tell you, I started getting real confused. I mean, I'm not even, there's not even like a really a linear story. It's bizarre stuff happening.
There is a linear story, but it's also nonstop, absurd imagery going on also. The story is basically, you know, there's a porthole in their crack house, in their flop house where they live, the Hercules family. Although I don't think the name Hercules is ever mentioned. Only I know that because they like constantly say Hercules. And from time to time, members of the family go through the portal, which is through some intestines, and take them to the forbidden zone. It's the sixth dimension where there's the king, which is Hervé Velaches, and the queen, which is Susan Tyrell, who we have seen in things recently, shockingly enough, is the queen. And then it's just, there's the evil queen, and then the king has fallen in love with everybody, so the queen gets pissed off. Meanwhile, there is a, let's just say, not a sensitive portrayal of a trans character that's also there for some bizarre reason. Oh, yeah.
Twins. A lot of fruitful language. And you neglect it as they go through the intestines to go between the crack house and the forbidden zone. They actually get pooped out at the end.
Yes.
There's a giant butt. And along with them falling through, there's like these long like poos that are like
brown pillows fall out with them, basically. Yes.
Yes.
And meanwhile, the king and queen's daughter, the princess, is wearing nothing but underwear. Like she's topless, wearing granny panties, dancing around for absolutely no reason.
She never has a top on the whole time.
Never has pants on. I mean, it's just bottoms underwear, granny panties. And then she has like long like gloves for some reason.
Yes. And quite frankly, at one point, the evil queen has a whole tit out at one point.
Yes. Multiple times. Multiple times you see her boobs. And you're just like, what? What is happening in this movie? Then, like you said, there's like two big muscle guys who are boxers who do nothing but make weird noises and grunts and groans and constantly pop up multiple times in this movie. What are they doing? Who the hell knows?
How about the time that they're also there, but just wearing jock straps and they're just wiggling to slap their own butt cheeks? How about that? Yes. How about one of them's married to Bette Midler?
That is true. Not at the time, but later they're still together. Yes, they got married in the mid-80s. Well, and Hervé Velaches and Susan Tyrell were in a relationship.
How could she resist?
Absolutely. The king and queen in real life had a relationship in real life while they were filming this movie.
For 2 years. Yes. Hervé got around, brother.
Oh, God. It's hard to talk about this movie because we usually say like, well, what a weird choice that is. Let's make fun of it. But the whole movie is that.
The whole movie is a weird choice. In fact, I did watch. I'm sorry. I'm wiggling my chair so you can hear that squeaking.
Yes.
Their Gong Show appearance, which we're going to have to post, is more coherent than anything else.
Well, the Gong, again, the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, an absurdist theater troupe who incorporated music. And it's usually, they talked about, Richard Elfman talks about, that they wanted to incorporate music that was kind of, you know, 50 years past or 60 or 100 years in the past kind of thing, and incorporated in their show. So they go on the Gong Show with Chuck Barris as the host and do like a song by Handel, like a famous...
classical piece.
Yes, absolutely. And they start it, and then immediately, like, weird creatures come out. Dragon pops around. There's a dude riding a rocket ship. And
That's Danny Elfman in the rocket ship, if I recall.
I couldn't tell if it was Danny or if it was Richard. Or
his brother, because they look freakishly similar.
They both have crazy red hair.
It's like our cousin Gig, that super, I'm going to glow in the dark orange hair.
Absolutely. And Buddy Hackett, Sherry Lewis, and Bill Bixby had not, Bill Bixby had 10 out of 10. Nobody gonged it. 10 out of 10.
That was perfect. I was like, why is there no gong? This is a setup. Clearly, this was when Chuck Barris was deeply involved with the CIA, if you watch that documentary.
I have seen that. but this was Richard Elfman's thing. This whole episode is just going to be kind of a documentary on the life of the Mystic Knights, the Oingo Boingo. This was his thing. Danny was busking through Africa, learning new music styles during the initial formation of the Mystic Knights, the Oingo Boingo. He returns from Africa because he gets malaria. And when he gets his health back together, he joins the troupe. Okay? They make this movie. Danny was like the composer of all the music, essentially. All the original tunes. And then he also kind of took, Cab Calloway's Minnie the Moocher and changed the lyrics to suit the plot of this movie, plot, quotation marks. But then eventually, Richard Elfman wanted to go and start just being a film director. So he left the Mystic Knights, the Oingo Boingo.
Right, this was his chance to go into film. He wanted to leave music.
Right.
Because he figured this is where the action was.
Absolutely. So again, this was like an absurdist theater troupe. They used a lot of music.
What were they saying? It was like a cabaret show in LA?
Absolutely. Well, they'd go and put on their shows in various locations. But what Danny said is that it was a pain in the ass to carry all of the sets everywhere. To have to constantly set up. So that's when he was like, you know, we're not doing all this stuff. He changed them to the Mystic Knights, this absurdist theater troupe, to just a rock band. Just Oingo Boingo. We're just going to go on stage and play our weird songs, which were original. Now we're doing original songs, but they're all, they're not, he would say, not commercial songs.
Right.
And now they still have like a horn section. They were vaguely like ska when they were first getting started. And then it became Oingo Boingo. And there you go. The rest is history. So there you go.
And the rest is history. I would have to say, speaking of Oingo Boingo, I went to a state sale yesterday and I have the album Only a Lad, where it's clearly Danny Elfman in a Boy Scout uniform. And I found the Boy Scout manual that was from the cover, which they clearly used for the cover of that album. I did not buy it, but I was like looking at it. I had to pick it up and look at it because it was identical to the album.
Right.
And I have Danny Elfman's autograph for The Only a Lad. I guess you don't hear him playing that song, I Love Little Girls. They don't play that one so much anymore.
I wonder why. But they eventually reached like main, because they were on K-Rock all the time, because K-Rock in LA was playing.
Yeah. Oingo Boingo still rocking. Everybody, but Danny Elfman doesn't tour. Now they're touring as former members of Oingo Boingo.
Right. But they were in movies. Their song Weird Science was the theme song of Weird Science. They were in Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield playing Dead Man's Party. They were in, at this point, like a huge success.
Are you trying to tell people that Oingo Boingo was a big band? I would hope they know that.
They may not know that. Who's to say? Especially if they saw this movie.
Who's in charge of their musical education?
Who's to say? But I was reading about this. Tim Burton called Danny Elfman up out of the blue.
The Forbidden Zone?
Because perhaps. Maybe he was just an Oingo Boingo fan and just said, hey, I need somebody to write the score for Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And Danny Elfman was like, are you kidding me? Why would anybody think? Like he said himself that he couldn't envision going forward and applying for such a job based upon his resume. So the idea that somebody's coming to him and offering him this position was crazy to him. But he took
it. And then they would be glued together forever.
Forever. Forever. So there you go. That's the origin.
You think Tim Burton, Danny Elfman, and Johnny Depp like still hang out together, even though they've destroyed their own careers by continuing to produce crap?
Yes.
Yes, and yes. They sit around like at the Magic Castle in LA smoking cigars and talking about Aleister Crowley or.
Well, if you want to be crazy, so you've seen Nightmare Before Christmas. I mean, if you look at the visuals, it's very Forbidden Zone-y, minus the nudity and the sex.
Yeah, it lacked a boob or two. I always thought Coraline could have done with a boob. A Nightmare Before Christmas, a boob or two. Her outfit was already ripping to shreds. Her arm were falling off. Why not a boob falling off and rolling down the hill?
Why not, indeed? Now, Danny Elfman was originally, he was the singing voice of Jack Skellington, but he was supposed to also be the speaking voice of Jack Skellington, but they didn't think he could act. So they replaced his speaking voice with Chris Sarandon from Fright Night and Child's Play and all sorts of other things.
God bless Chris Sarandon. People just keep hiring. People must love him. Well, not Susan Sarandon, I guess. I guess not Susan, though.
Woof, woof. She kept his name.
Give
me your leather. Take from me my name. You ever heard that song? Leather and Lace by Stevie Nicks and Don Henley. I need you to love me. I need you to stay.
I do know that.
There you go. I'm not Danny Elfman composing fresh music here.
You were riffing right here. Riffing.
That's what we do. Good Lord.
There were interesting things. The Queen looks cool. There were, and it would have been better just in the pure black and white. There are some really cool visuals. The animation I really liked. I enjoyed the Queen. I don't enjoy all the 12-year-old, everybody's getting F'd in the A. I don't enjoy all the people running around with their tops off. This is all 12-year-old boy humor. Ha ha ha.
Well, it definitely had the vibe of, we think this is hilarious. We think this is so hilarious. But I agree.
They were rolling around and laughing to themselves. Right. It was like you filmed a movie at the end of a party.
Right. Well, it's like Andy Kaufman or any of these other things where it's like, we think this is funny. We don't care if anybody else enjoys it.
And that's what it is. That's fine. That is absolutely fine. No one's saying it should be banned. No one's saying that no one should watch it. I mean, entertain yourself. I mean, if you're making art, you better enjoy your f-ing art, because that should be the most important thing, really. Right? Otherwise, you know what I mean? You need to be your biggest fan.
This is a free country, isn't it?
If you're not your biggest fan, then every time people are not buying all your work, then you're just going to be depressed. You need to be able to say, fuck that. I created this because I wanted to create it, and I like it. Well, apparently that's our plan. We're going to get shirts that say, I think it's funny, so fuck you.
We're the new Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, basically. That's right. Sweet Jesus. No, it was definitely kind of juvenile humor. But I mean, you could argue that's what absurdist humor is, where it's just so bizarre that little kids would enjoy it. Absurdist humor is not my cup of tea. I think it's more your cup of tea. Spoken word, music.
No, you wouldn't think. But really, it's not mine. Here's a question, Kevin. Which do you prefer, Eraserhead or The Forbidden Zone?
Well, what's funny is which one is the comedy? I haven't seen Eraserhead in probably 15 years, so it's hard for me to even have an opinion. But they're both very much like I would walk out the door in 5 minutes kind of movies, where it's just so bizarre. There was a movie, Terrence Malick is a famous, acclaimed director. People love him. He gets Academy Award nominations up the yin-yang. Becky and I, years ago, were watching Tree of Life, which was nominated for Best Picture. And it literally starts out with no narration, no voiceover, just like space. And then there's a planet. And then there's turmoil on the planet. And then life gradually forms on, and you're just like, what the, and you're 20 minutes into the dawn of, no explanation.
That's how I felt about the opening of The English Patient.
There's that as well. And I'm fast forwarding going, is this the movie? And it was like 45 minutes. And then I see like, I don't know, Brad Pitt or somebody appears on the screen. I'm like, I'm not sitting through 45 minutes of the Earth cooled before I get to a narrative.
It's still too hot. Life can't exist yet. Just give it another 20 minutes.
That's what I'm saying.
Cool it down a little bit more.
Now, you hated adaptation, but it's kind of that jokey
narration
where it was like, it's the dawn of time, and then there were dinosaurs. It was like kind of like that, but that was a joke. Where this is stone cold serious, the dawn of time.
Well, thank you for letting me know that. I'll put that on the list of shit not to watch again. I'm just going to watch Big Love again for a third viewing instead.
Well, it's
how
like,
about that?
Is it art? Perhaps. But I go to the movies to be entertained first. You know what I mean? If then you teach me something, if then there's some beautiful imagery, cool. But number one is I want to be entertained. That's why I'm here. So that's an offer for Tree of Life. And frankly, that's an offer for good old Forbidden Zone and Eraserhead, which you love. You love Eraserhead.
It's so disturbing. So disturbing.
But it's. Could you find a plot in Eraserhead? Yeah.
No one knows.
If you worked hard,
no one knows.
There's definitely parts where you're like, what? But you could say it's a dude chilling in his apartment.
I mean, there's a plot in Blue Velvet. I mean, yes. I can tell you the story of Blue Velvet. I cannot tell you what happened to Lost Highway. I cannot tell you what's going on in Eraserhead.
Forbidden Zone, I can tell you exactly, you know, so they're kidnapped. People are falling into the Forbidden Zone. Some are being kidnapped. Now there's a coterie of bizarro characters roaming around
but
doing bizarro
all
things.
All crackheads, because who else is in the crack house looking for places to hide their heroin?
Well, that was just the first. And I knew we were...
Is there more? Okay. Is there more multiple entrances to the Forbidden Zone?
There's just the one. But first, there's like kind of a cartoon. I knew we were in trouble because it was a cartoon dropping F-bombs, screaming, oh, shit, you know, F this, whoa, you know. And then it cuts to, by the way, later another family moves in. So really the whole thing with the crack guy, slumlord, all around bad person, really has nothing to do with anything other than to introduce the idea that, yes,
he was a clown. Basement,
he was a clown. Yeah. He pops up every now and again. The evil clown. He has nothing to do with the plot. It's about this family. There's the mother who's really old, married to her husband, who's Swedish for some reason.
And who's clearly a young man dressed as an old man.
Exactly. They've got a daughter named Frenchie, who's French. Then they've got Grandpa, who's just some dude in a weird beard. And then the other son, Flash, who's an 80-year-old man for some reason. And that's
who
the
last two characters are clearly like this weird anti-Semitic, like how they would draw Jewish people in World War II.
I mean, but yes, but I think that's also just kind of who they are. On so, because I, like you said, I think they're all Jewish too. So I don't know what the messages they were making.
I don't know.
It's a freak show. And then there's the classroom with all the bizarro. There was just so many, there's so much bizarreness in this movie. I can't even begin.
A lot of stereotyping. I mean, this was, what was it, 77? People were not so aware. So there's all the black kids who are 40 at this high school are dressed up like they're slipping out of Shaft. Shut your mouth.
I'm talking about Shaft.
Talking about Shaft. And then there's the gunfight between them at one point and their teacher.
Teacher pulls out a Tommy gun and is shooting at them First, she shoots just to get the class's attention, like James Cagney or somebody, which, frankly, that was the most realistic part of the movie, if I'm being honest. So, yes. And then a gun. Well, first there's guy playing cards and one guy stabs the other guy.
Because he was cheating.
Because he was cheating. So that's when the teacher goes, then you need to go to the principal's office. And he goes, I didn't even want to come to this dumbass school. So then they get into a shootout. Kids jumping through windows. It was, yeah.
Then there's a chicken boy. There's a chicken boy.
The chicken boy who's like abused by his mother, yes, who pops up later, and has a twin who is transgender, who has fallen into the forbidden zone later.
Who is the twin's twin?
Chicken boy is the twin of the transgender character played by the same actor.
There was a transgender character?
Yes, the guy who was in the wig the whole time.
Oh my god, I'm never. Oh, I just thought it was the same dude in a wig.
No. Because later the chicken boy gets his head cut off, and the head kind of flies around.
Oh god,
they were twins. Why am I knowing this?
And then there was the dude from The Godfather, who after doing The Godfather rolled on over to the Forbidden Zone and played Chicken Boy's like father. And they were like practically having sex on top of the Chicken Boy's nest.
Yes, he was in the Navy. He's like, I'm shipping out. Joe Spinell, who's been in a ton of stuff. Joe Spinell. It's so bizarre. There's like a handful of characters or actors or performers, whatever, that you're like, I know who these people are vaguely. Why in God's green earth are they in this movie?
And there was only one person who got paid, and it wasn't Joe Spinell.
Who got paid?
Well, I can't even remember now. Maybe it was Joe. Somebody. There's only one person who got paid. Maybe it was him. He got like $4,000.
2 minutes of this movie. He pops up, grabs the draw. Tyrell's boob a handful of times, and then bounces.
Direct from The Godfather, Joe Spinell stars in The Forbidden Zone. Yeah.
Sweet Jesus. Is there anything else, or should we go behind the scenes? I mean, we've kind of already talked about it.
Bits and pieces just keep popping into my eyes, but mostly I remember is the grandfather and the other child who both have long beards. Yes. Flash just keep boinking everybody every 2 seconds.
Right. They constantly go behind people with sound effects and just get them from behind constantly.
Like one of those old horns for the cars from like. It's
Auga.
Auga. The best part is the queen. The best part is the queen and the king. I'm going to show up. I think she might be my Halloween costume for next year.
Hervé Valachaise, who's again tattoo from Fantasy Island, kisses about 15 chicks over the course of this movie. I know why he signed up to do this.
For sure. And I saw the documentary about him too. And yeah, he was Mr. Loverman. Mickey Rooney syndrome. You got to pork them all.
Do you know what's funny? I was reading about, there was that movie that Tom Cruise did called Legend. In about 85, it's kind of a Lord of the Rings kind of thing.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Tim Curry plays like the evil demon who's trying to get at Tom Cruise, something like that. Evidently, there's a lot of little like dwarf people, like elves or whatever they are. And they wanted Mickey Rooney to play one of those characters, but he was too tall. He was too tall to play a little like elven character.
He's short.
Yes.
But he's not that short. That's the first time he ever heard that.
Too tall next to Tom Cruise. That was the height disparity.
I thought you were telling me he's too tall compared to like Warwick Davis. He's a little too close to Tom Cruise's height, as we already knew. How tall is Mickey Rooney?
I mean, he's probably what, like 5'2", 5'3"?
Oh my God.
Where you got Tom Cruise is like 5'6". So they're basically like contemporaries. So they did. They said, sorry, Mickey, and brought in Billy Barty, who's like, what, 3'5"? I mean, you had to get like an actual little person rather than just kind of a really short guy.
Right. He is 5'2". You're right on the mark with that. So,
that.
Yeah, he would just be, what, 3-4 inches shorter than Tom Cruise,
right,
even with his Cuban heels. Ah!
Isn't that crazy? Anyway. Such is
that's
life,
a little bit of a gem there. I enjoyed that.
Thank you. That's what I bring to the table. Shall we go behind the scenes before we all
toss
our cookies?
Yeah, go for it.
Director Richard Elfman and star Marie Pascal Elfman, who were married at the time, financed the movie by buying, renovated, and selling houses.
All right.
They still ran out of money, and the movie was rescued by a mysterious benefactor of some sort.
So that's so funny. They should have done the Evil Dead, where you shoot it on weekends and drag your friends along.
I'm sure that's what they did. In the film's commentary,
the budget was about $100,000.
Yep. They were like, flip it or find it or flip it or whatever that those shows are on Home.
They were the first
Network.
Ones. Yep.
In the film's commentary, Richard Elfman reveals that the dysfunctional Hercules family was said to be inspired by some trailer park types he lived next door to in Venice. The father would yell at the mother would yell at the son would yell at the daughter, and the daughter would kick the dog.
Yep.
There you go. Makes sense.
Not so many trailers in Venice anymore.
There are not. You talked about how this movie was originally a black and white film. That was by design. Richard Elfman intended for the film to be shipped out to China, where each frame of the original black and white print was to be individually colored by hand, but this plan was found to be inefficient. Really?
Really?
Really? Yes. In 2008, the film was digitally colorized under Elfman's authorization and supervision.
So you're saying it was supposed to be in color to begin with?
Yes. But
I thought it was much
way.
More effective in black and white. I'm just saying.
There is a heavyset of boy who appears twice in this movie. And
yes.
It was somebody who Richard Elfman had known from his neighborhood.
But the
so
mouth
shy.
Is cut away, so it's just a little mouth going. It's like a
we'll
cutaway.
Talk about this. He was so shy that during his intended musical performance, he froze up on camera. And his mouth was superimposed with Matthew Bright's, who played the twin roles. So that was his singing voice. Isn't that nice?
I kind of like that part.
Sweet Jesus. That's about it. Should we talk about the cast and crew?
Please.
I'm not talking about all these weirdos. Okay? We could be here until doomsday.
There's some like friends. There's some family members. There are some Warhol freaks. There are all kinds of interesting characters.
Well, and oftentimes they're not using their real names.
Yeah.
Like even their names like in the cast list.
Yes.
Are not their real names by design.
When I went through the Wikipedia, I would click on, first of all, only maybe four people in the cast have a Wikipedia link. So everything else is just grayed out. And half the time I would click on a name and would open a different name. Like there's an actor and I was like, who the hell is that? Click the button and a different name pops up as one of the actual writers.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's some of this stuff, especially the two like twin dudes who are like wearing jackstraps and just grunting.
The Kipper kids.
Like, that's their whole thing. Like they have appeared in multiple things, just the two of them, just undulating and grunting at the, that's their act.
That's their thing.
That's their thing. I was watching Weird Al Yankovic's movie UHF, and they're in that too, doing exactly the same thing. And I'm like, who?
What a deal!
What? I can't. I'm speechless. It's like, how do you come up with this bizarre act? And then you do it often enough and people like applaud, I'm assuming.
They're like, dude, we got to get the Kipper kids in here. We got to get them in.
That's what I'm saying. It's so bizarre. Anyway, Frenchie was actually played by a French actress, shockingly enough. I thought her accent was bizarre and offensive, but it's Marie Pascal Elfman, who was married to Richard Elfman at the time. Shockingly,
he was living in Paris for a time.
Yes,
they had this very bohemian life. Yeah.
She's known for The Forbidden Zone, shockingly enough, and Hot Tomorrows, which I think is another bizarro
production. She's like, that's enough.
Let's see. Susan Tyrell played Queen Doris of the Sixth Dimension. We talked about her. She was in frickin' Rockula, for God's sakes.
Who was she in Rockula?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. What's better? Forbidden Zone? Rockula.
I would watch Rockula every day, all day long, before I'd ever watch this again.
Oh my god, that'd be like some—that's purgatory. That would be just falling into a black abyss watching Rockula every day.
Right, you know her. She was in Ramona Ricketts in Crybaby, the Johnny Depp movie. She was Mary Aiken in 1977's Bad. She was Oma in 1972's Fat City. There you go. I was talking about how I remember her from Angel, which was the...
Like the series?
No, the series of movies that came out where she's a honor student by day, Hollywood hooker by night. If you don't remember those films, check them out.
Is that Behind the Curtain or...
It's not Born, although this movie could qualify, frankly. Matthew Bright played Squeeze It. And Renee Henderson, the twins.
Oh, God.
God help us all. You know him. He was a writer on Freeway. He wrote a bunch of these things. He wrote Tippy Toes. That movie where it's Gary Oldman on his knees because he's supposed to be a little person. Check that one out. He wrote Ted Bundy in 2002. Oh, sweet Jesus. He does a lot of writing. He wrote After Different Strokes When the Laughter Stopped. You know it.
Oh, Behind the Music.
Yeah, pretty much.
Laughter stopped. Oh, God.
He was, like I said, he was in The Forbidden Zone, but he was credited as Toshiro Baloney.
Yes, that's what I clicked on. Toshiro Baloney. Yeah. Phony Baloney.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Richard Elfman was the director and the primary writer. You know him as the director of Bloody Bridget in 2023. Oh, that's out now. He directed Aliens, Clowns, and Geeks.
Assume they mean Circus Geeks, right?
Could be.
There's a chicken parallel.
All sorts of stuff.
What'd you say? Modern Vampires of what?
It was a TV movie. Oh. So you can watch that one as well. Danny Elfman, of course, played Satan. In a very brief scene where he sings, as I said, Cab Calloway's crazy song.
Well, he's in the white Cab Calloway tuxedo, too.
Yes. Richard Elfman was also on camera playing the masseur, who was giving Susan Tyrell a massage. So there you go. Danny Elfman, you know him primarily for being in the music department, composer. Nightmare Before Christmas, Charlie and the Chocolate
Lead singer of Boingo.
Of course, the lead singer of Boingo Boingo. He's married to Bridget Fonda. Did you know that?
I did. I kept seeing that popping up. I was like, what?
Isn't that crazy? Joe Spinell played Drunken Sailor. You know him from Taxi Driver, Rocky, Maniac, Godfather Part 2. He was in a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Ton of stuff. I was going to tell you, Susan Tyrell, who played the Evil Queen, is an Academy Award, at least a nominee, if not a winner. Let me look at this. Nominated for one Oscar. One win. Nominee in 1973, Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Fat City.
Okay.
Winner of the American Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films for Bad in 1978. She won Best Supporting Actress. There you go. Fat City was evidently her big thing. Nominated up and down.
Have you ever seen that? What's Fat City?
Let's take a look. Best Actress in Supporting Role. This is John Huston directed it. Stars Stacey Keach, Jeff Bridges, and Susan Tyrell.
Wow.
Candy Clark.
All right.
All sorts of stuff. I've never heard of it, but evidently the surprise hit of this year's Cannes Film Festival.
Okay, well, that we've all learned that don't mean nothing.
It don't mean nothing. Shall we talk about the ratings?
Lay it on me. It's freakishly high rated.
It is. It currently has 83% on the Rotten Tomatoes. Now, only 12 reviews.
Yeah. Only what did Richard reviews. Roper say?
Did not
what did Siskel
it.
And Ebert say?
Do you know what the audience gave it with 5,000 plus reviews?
23.
81%.
Yeah. Something wrong.
There's only one top critic, and it's somebody I'm not familiar with. Charles Bromesco of Polygon says,
"Okay,
Forbidden Zone
can't be a top critic unless people have actually heard of them. I'm a top critic then. Top just critic, Aaron Doherty says.
Look, just because I haven't heard of them doesn't mean that they're not very famous and successful.
I'm sorry, what was the publication? You said the New York Times? What was
Polygon?
It?
Polygon.
Oh, yeah.
Shocking.
Mm-hmm. Cutting edge.
The Forbidden Zone's sheer gleeful strangeness quotient still humbles that of any big screen musical that's come since. That's from 2020. So there you go.
Lord. Nothing comes since.
No. Well, and the thing about it, audience reviews, you have to take with a grain of salt as well, because it's kind of a self-selecting group. You know, the people who are going to go see this kind of know what they're getting into for the most part, and they're in for it. So,
right.
What is your rating, Aaron?
Oh, I am going to give it 1.5 trips down the underground colon, only to be pooped out on Hervé Villages 5.
I was on Letterboxd. Earlier today.
The second out. Audio commentary?
Yes, exactly. And I literally was like, so there's nothing in there to give it zero stars. So I gave it the lowest I could give it, which was 0.5 star. This movie, it's rough. It is rough sledding. So I'm going to say half of, oh God, help us all. I'm not even going to say anything else. It's 0.5 star, and that's all you need to know. It is awful. It is unwatchable.
It gave me some ideas. They're trying to do that. Like, remember when we watched, did I watch Nosferatu with you or Count Orlok? There's that German expressionism with the shadows and the foreshortening, the sets gave me that vibe.
Right.
Yeah. So I could appreciate that. I thought the sets were really weird and cool, and I liked the graphics, but it was mostly just fucked up nonsense that wasn't interesting enough to keep my attention.
It was
how's that
watchable? It was.
There were some cool stills. There's some imagery that looked cool, but that's not enough. Just like in Vamp. The 2 minutes of her doing her song and dance are not, it's not enough.
Vamp is Citizen Kane compared to this. I mean, this is, it's like you said, it's like, hey, we are drunken theater students. You know, it's the end of the night. We've got a set. We got a camera.
Boom. Camera's rolling.
We're half in the bag. Let's just do it. Let's just see what happens. And then we'll turn that into a movie. But this is evidently the pinnacle of their work. The Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo. Not my cup of tea.
Not my
to say the least. So,
not my cup of tea. I will never watch
this,
it again.
I apologize. Good Lord.
I will say it is the perfect movie to just project on a wall at your nightclub. Don't sit down and watch this shit.
No.
And the imagery at a club with other music going is awesome. Don't sit down and try to listen to this shit.
Do not.
It was perfect for what it was. I took it too far by actually trying to sit down and watch it. That was a bridge too far. And
took it too far.
That's my bad. It's a self-inflicted wound, clearly.
You have to live with that. Live with the choice.
I'm
going
to have to live with this. I'm not sure I can just sleep at night. These images are going to keep going on and on and on. And I blame myself for just a little bit for inflicting it upon you.
But I blame you as well.
It'll happen again.
Sure will.
Did you see? I almost texted you. Might not want to watch this with the kids. Maybe not.
This has happened on a few occasions where I'm watching a show and suddenly it's just rampant nudity. And I'm like, if at any moment a child walks in, I think I'm in trouble here.
That's right.
Bad.
So CPS is going to be phoned in. They're going to haul you away just for your depravity. It harkens back to the time we were in the back room trying to watch Reservoir Dogs and mom wanted to walk in right as they were cutting the dude's f***ing ear off. And then for the rest of the day, we had to hear how we're deviants and depraved and there's something seriously wrong with us if we find this entertainment.
True on all counts. There you go. So thank you very much. Go to our page on Facebook, on Twitter, on TikTok, on Instagram. All sorts of good stuff. We're still doing our WTF reels and videos across every platform that the world may know or may not know. You can also email us the podcast that wouldn't die at
Gmail.
You can also, what else? We are on YouTube. You may be watching it there. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. Anywhere the finer podcasts are available. So don't forget
to say the ticker talker?
Yeah. I said the ticker talker. Aaron,
are we on Threads? Are we on Parlay? Are we on Threads yet? Is that going to be a thing?
At some point, we may be on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Threads. We will see. We'll keep you abreast of the situation. What are you on right now,
Kevin? This is too much.
It's a freak show.
It's too much. Yes. I can't even keep up with my Instagram, but I have work that's available on First Dibs, on Artsy. Hopefully I can get my shit together and I'll put a link for purchasing on Big Cartel one of these days.
Good times. Now! We often talk about questions, comments from our friends on the interwebs. Here we go. Some comments about our movie Halloween H2O 20 years later. Are you ready?
Boom.
Adam Wells says, still more fun and better final confrontation than anything DGG, that's David Gordon Green, had to offer. He's the guy who did the three latest iterations. So he prefers H2O. So what do you think?
All I'm saying is it's making three sound better and better every day.
Absolutely. Derek Murray says, I have no logical reason to even say this, but I actually really enjoy this one. So I appreciate you opening up and sharing that. It's not,
I know.
We talked about it. It's not that bad.
It's hard to put yourself out there and, you know, be open to ridicule, but I appreciate that. And here's some ridicule.
It's pretty good. As far as they go, it's pretty good. It's not, look, we've said it before. This ain't Robert Frost. This ain't Shakespeare. That being said,
did Robert Frost do a lot of horror films?
Who's to say? I'm not a scholar.
I ain't no Scientologist.
There it is. I'm going to mess up your name, David, but I apologize. David Mitchor, perhaps? Best ending ever. Nothing has ever topped it. Nothing ever will. So there you
I'm
go.
Still sad it wasn't underwater because that's what I thought it would be.
Because of the H2O.
Yes.
Absolutely. Sweet.
Yes. Who knew it meant Halloween 20 years later?
Who indeed? Next week, we're going to more conventional horror film. We're going to discuss the horror classic Phantasm. Aaron was shocked that we hadn't already done this. We have not.
I feel like we watched it this year.
It's possible, but we haven't done it on the show.
Why would we waste all that time and not see it? Are you sure?
I am 100% positive.
Okay,
Phantasm.
How many of these damn things have we reviewed? Do you have a catalog?
204 movies. Something like that.
Maybe that's right. We just had our 200 episode. Lord, good time. We had a lot to say.
It might be 207 by the time this one comes out.
So okay, first of all, is there a full size mannequin standing behind you? And how did I just notice that?
That's what we
do. Is it
in
a
this
mannequin
house.
Or a cutout?
It's a cutout. It'd be too terrifying if there's a weird mannequin behind me. What well, if it suddenly
I do have
came
a weird
mannequin. Right behind me, he starts moving around. It's I'm in my daughter Grace's room, and this is one of the dudes from Supernatural. This is Jensen.
Oh, which one?
I believe the I don't know, Sam, Fred,
the
Dave,
short one,
the characters, the shorter one,
the short one who is not on Gilmore Girls. So she just rock into a lot of Kansas these days. Carry on, Hollywood son.
If you want to watch Phantasm, you can watch it on Fubo, Peacock, AMC Plus, Roku, Tubi, Canopy, Cradle. Or that's a sorry,
Cradle.
I need my reading glasses. Cradle. Maybe Cradle it has Cradle as well. Shudder, Pluto TV. Also, I don't even know what some of these are. Plex, Freevee. So it just depends. Do you want it free or do you want it free with ads? So there you go. Send in your favorite scenes, favorite quotes, comments, and questions, and we may talk about it on the show. So good times had by all. Thank you very
much. Did we ever watch Rollerball?
Not for the show, we haven't. Not for the show, we haven't. I've seen it recently, but not for the show.
Did I see it
add
with
it
you?
No.
All right, add it to the list.
So thank you very much and be well.
Bye, children.